Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I am Mike Spofford, joined, as always, by the one and only Weston Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field to talk about, Wes, the 2024 NFL Draft. It was a wild and crazy 3 days. I'll start by asking, have you recovered? Are you all right?
I think so. I it's always interesting, and you were talking about this a little bit on Monday. Sunday was not... I didn't get much accomplished on Sunday.
Nope, me neither.
I woke up a little later. I ended up taking a good like 2-hour nap as well. And then I am not a good napper to begin with. So then you kind of get back into the flow of things. And yesterday went fine. And then today has been like difficult to get rolling again. But we're here. We're excited. And 11 more draft picks coming into the Green Bay Packers fold.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you said, it was 11 picks, starting with offensive lineman Jordan Morgan in the first round. And I have to say this because I'm normally not right about anything, but I did say on our last show before the draft, I predicted the Packers would have 11 picks because it would be a combination of trades up and trades down, which ended up being correct. And then I said if Brian Gutekunst sat and picked in the first round and did not trade, he would sit and pick an offensive lineman. And I ended up being right on that count as well. So just have to say that because usually I'm like totally wrong. But of the 11 picks, three offensive linemen, three safeties, two linebackers, plus a running back, a quarterback, and a cornerback. Your first impression of this draft class as a collective and what it means for the 2024 Green Bay Packers.
I'm going to steer it back really quickly, if I can, to your point about Morgan in the first round, because once again, we saw Brian Gutekunst take three offensive linemen in a draft. That's something that he's been very interesting with the way he's approached this, where there was back-to-back years, consecutive years, where he took three. Last year, he took none.
Yeah.
For good reason. It was a well-stocked cabinet. This year, you lose some guys, so in comes this new draft class. And you know, I give you credit. I give a lot of people credit. Obviously, I picked Amarius Mims. I was thinking.
Yeah, you were on offensive lineman as well.
But I think pound for pound, when you really break it down, Mike, tackle, whatever Morgan ends up playing in the pros, that's what made the most sense for Green Bay here. I think that's what gave you the biggest bang for your buck. It was interesting how it landed because Mims goes off the board at 18. Graham Barton is still there at 25. As it turned out, Guyton was also still available. I think he ended up going 29, Tyler Guyton. But the Packers really like Jordan Morgan. They like his size. They like the way he bounced back from the knee injury. He was a team leader. A common thread between this draft was team captains and Senior Bowl participation. And Morgan was a part of that. I think there's a lot to like about his 40 time, the athleticism there. And then the one thing I'll kind of laugh at a little bit, you and I talk so much about Edger and Cooper, and where is this guy going to be? What's his value going to be? Well, the answer was he was the 45th overall pick. And I think if you listen to what folks like Daniel Jeremiah said, some of these other pundits, I think the Packers got Edger and Cooper, who I believe will be a really strong pro. I think he's going to be a great guy to pair up with Quay Walker. I think they got him for the maximum value there, being able to move back a couple spots, get a couple more picks to have some trade equity with and some flexibility, and now you're getting the first off-ball linebacker that was drafted in this draft class. I could go on forever about this thing, Mike, but I think with how they set the tone in the first 2 days, it reminded me a lot of last year where You found depth. You addressed some needs, but I think you also found some really intriguing football players as well.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, the crux, the heart of this draft was Friday, the second and third rounds, because having four picks on day two of the draft is a rarity. It just doesn't happen very often, and through a combination of circumstances, the extra pick still left over from the Aaron Rodgers trade, and then the move up from the fifth round to the third round from the Rasul Douglas trade, that's why the Packers had 2 seconds and two thirds. And taking nothing away from Jordan Morgan as the first round pick, we had talked about offensive line and all that, so that did not surprise me. But what the Packers did on Friday night, I think, you know, you get the number one, the first off-ball linebacker taken in the draft. You also take the second safety off the board, who I believe, and I'll get into this a little bit more in a minute, I believe he had to be the number one safety on the Packers board. I firmly believe that. Then you add, a running back to the equation in the third round. Really, really interesting prospect. I want to talk more about Marshawn Lloyd as well. And then you double up at the off-ball linebacker with Tyron Hopper from Missouri. That's sort of the, you know, the blood and guts of this draft to me is what the Packers did in rounds two and round three. When I try to look at things in the big picture, I think the Packers got a combination of potential, if not likely, immediate starters at some spots, but also then a lot of depth and competition and everything at various other positions. To me, I think Edger and Cooper and Javon Bullard are odds-on favorites to earn starting jobs in Jeff Hafley's defense. That being said, I'm not ruling out Tyron Hopper in the Edger and Cooper, Isaiah McDuffie, Quay Walker, that whole, and how that's going to sort itself out. And I'm not ruling out either of the other two safeties with regard to Bullard and how maybe that shakes out for who will be the starting safety alongside Xavier McKinney, the free agent acquisition. And maybe you have another starter in Jordan Morgan. He's going to start out, according to Matt LaFleur, at left tackle, which means he'll be competing with Rashid Walker, who had a heck of a year in 2023, but he's only started 1 year in the NFL. That's not to say that a guy like Jordan Morgan couldn't come in and beat him out. I don't think Rashid Walker's going to give up that spot very easily. I think he's going to fight for it, and that's exactly what the coaches and the scouts and everybody wants is the competition to try to, you know, raise everybody's level of play. It's what worked for the Packers last year with the whole youth movement at wide receiver and at tight end. We saw how by the second half of the season, all the competition for playing time and for targets and for everything else got the Packers offense to another level. And I think they're looking for the same thing at various positions with how they went about this draft.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking specifically at safety, you know, no disrespect to what the Packers had at that position last year, but I think when you're looking at the draft picks that they ended up with here, you're just getting a different caliber of athlete in a lot of ways. And certainly Bullard, it starts with him. I mean, this is a guy that was a starting nickel cornerback for Georgia when they won the national championship, two interceptions in the national championship game, defensive MVP. Then the next year he plays on the back end. He talked about it in his conference call with reporters. He sees himself as a three-position safety, a guy that can play in the slot. He can play both positions on the back end. A lot to like in terms of his speed, his athleticism. He's a Georgia Bulldog, and I think everybody understands. I believe it was Pat Moore, who's the Packers scout, that even said that. When you play for Kirby Smart, you're going to tackle. You're going to have a tenacity. You don't get on the field in the SEC in those environments if you're not a competitor, if you're not giving it everything. And I think that's something to look forward to with him. But, you know, Evan Williams is a guy, and I joked about this in Insider Inbox. I don't know how he plays from a play style perspective, but when I close my eyes and listen to that conference call, I could have swore I was listening to Micah Hyde from 10 years ago.
It's a really good comparable because his voice, his demeanor as it came through over the phone with the reporters, I agree with you. There's a lot of Micah Hyde there.
And you listen to safeties and they talk about communicators and guys that can relate, you know, to their teammates. Williams, everything I've read in the subsequent days after, whether it was at Fresno State or whether it was at Oregon, it sounds like that's something that he did well. Now, the thing that's going to be interesting is both him and Bullard, they look like more of the box safety types, guys that have played a lot in the slot, have that type of flexibility. Ketan Oladepo, on the back end of it, the last safety they drafted, appears to be more of the back end type safety. And I think there's value in that as well. I mean, not that he can't play in the slot as well, but, you know, 6'2", 215 pounds. I mean, this kid brings it. Had to work and cut his teeth for everything that he got at Oregon State. He was a walk-on, very lightly recruited, waited 3 years. It looked like he was going to get his opportunity. Then he gets hurt. Then he's a three-year starter for them. And I don't know if you got a chance to watch the play, but if you want to see what that kid's all about, his chase down tackle against Washington last year, where there is one guy that has any chance at being able to bring down the ball carry before the end zone, it's Ketan. And not only does he take him down, he strips him of the ball and they get the turnover.
Wow.
Those are the extra effort plays when guys are going to that second level that you need. The Green Bay Packers, they got Xavier McKinney. That's a huge get for them. Top free agent safety on the market. But other than that, you only had Anthony Johnson Jr. coming back, a second-year player with 300 defensive snaps, and Zane Anderson, who didn't see the field last year at safety. Benny Sapp played a little bit on special teams, but overall, you needed to find some answers for that. And when we talk about the strength of this draft, an off-ball linebacker's a piece of it, offensive line is a piece of it, but no position needed more of an infusion of talent than safety, and Brian Gutekunst came through.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because, you know, the fans ask us a lot, okay, so what's your biggest takeaway from this draft? And I can't believe that I've been here as long as I have and haven't really processed and articulated this as I'm about to, but couple things I discovered in this draft. It was sort of like this mini epiphany that I had. It's not just that the Packers like versatility in their players, whether you're talking the offensive lineman or the safety who can maybe play the slot corner. Excuse me. It's not just that they like guys who who have been a captain, you know, a defensive captain, an offensive captain, a team captain, whatever that means in college. But it's that they place a value on those types of things that is built into the draft board, you know. And that's why I said earlier, I think Javon Bullard was the number one safety on the Packers board. He was considered the number two or number three safety on most of the lists that you look at. Well, how does he become the number one safety on the Packers board compared to those other guys? Well, all the other, you know, the draft analysts out there, and I'm not disparaging their work at all, but they're looking at Tyler Dubin from Minnesota and Javon Bullard from Georgia, and they're looking at the tape of how they play safety and the things that they do, and a lot of people rated Tyler Dubin as the better safety. But the Packers end up putting a guy like Javon Bullard higher on their board because he can also play the nickel. He can play the slot corner. The versatility, they probably view him, if not just a better player, maybe period, than the other safeties. But if all the other traits are close enough to being equal, the versatility is what puts a guy like Javon Bullard over the top and, you know, bumps him up the draft board.
Yep.
Five of the Packers' 11 draft picks, including Evan Williams, who was a captain at Fresno State before the transfer to Oregon, five of these players were captains on their team in college. that is part of the Packers draft grade and how they build their board. And so it's not just some kind of a coincidence that the Packers are always drafting these versatile players and drafting guys who were captains on their college teams. It's a part of their evaluation process that is factored into the grade and factored into how they build the board. And it took me a lot of years before it kind of hit me. It's not just some kind of coincidence, right?
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. I'm not guarding like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The other thing I'll say, too, because you mentioned the Senior Bowl, this year in particular, 8 of these 11 guys were at the Senior Bowl. Actually, 9 of them were, but one of them couldn't participate because he was dealing with an injury at the time. I believe that was Hopper from Missouri, if I'm not mistaken. But I started to think a little bit more, and I asked a follow-up question to a question to Brian Gutekunst on Saturday night with regard to the Senior Bowl, and I asked a follow-up question, again, something that kind of hit me, how important the Senior Bowl is as an evaluation tool, because, yes, these guys, they grind the tape, they watch everything on video, but all you know, you're watching all the game video, and that's when, you know, the coaches have game planned, when you've studied your opponent, et cetera, et cetera. And what you get at the Senior Bowl is, okay, here, Jordan Morgan, here's one of the best edge rushers in the league in this draft class coming out. You're going one-on-one against him in practice. You haven't had a chance to study him. You haven't watched any film on him. You just got to go out there and play. That's what the Senior Bowl is. That's what that week of practices is from an evaluation standpoint, and the Packers put a lot of stock in that, in how those guys perform in that environment. I thought Brian Gutekunst's comments on Saturday night really helped to explain, you know, what it is about the Senior Bowl that makes it different from an evaluation standpoint. So those are a lot of the things that were going through my head with regard to this draft class and how it kind of comes together for me. Any other takeaways for you in sort of the collective sense?
Well, and the Senior Bowl is an important tool too, and I've been learning this more and more over my time, actually probably more with Packers.com than even when I was at the Press Gazette, because it's one thing for Jordan Morgan to be lining up against Leatu Latu, right, and to see some of the two top guys in the country. Then you go into the sixth round, you have a guy like Travis Glover, who, my goodness, Michael, when you look in just terms of the makeup of a player, when a guy is 6'6", 320 pounds, 84.5-inch wingspan, almost 35-inch arms, he looks the part as a tackle. But he played at Georgia State,
right,
which is a program that's still relatively in its infancy in the Sun Belt.
Yeah, it's only been around for about a dozen years or so.
Yeah, so being able to, for him to go to the Senior Bowl, I believe it was Jason Wilde who asked Brian about this, that's a huge marker for him being able to then match up against some of those top guys. And it's somebody that definitely improved his draft stock through that process as well.
Yeah, and Glover went to the Hula Bowl as well.
Yes,
He was actually at two of the college All-Star games. And that was big for him, as you said, as a smaller school guy. That's where you line up against the Power Five conference players, and the evaluators get an extra and even more important look at you.
And then the three guys I just want to touch on quickly because we haven't mentioned their names yet. Jacob Monk from Duke. I don't know if I've ever heard Brian as openly talk about a prospect that they legitimately had their eye on in that day three. You know, he mentioned there was numerous scouts in that room that really liked him. If you look at it, the kid has some really intriguing intangibles. He's 6'3", 310 pounds, runs a 5.09 40, very strong. I believe he was the one that put up 31 on the bench press. a five-year starter, very rare. And if I keep telling people, remember, the ACC played basically throughout the COVID year. They didn't do a half season or we're going to cancel the season and then they start playing. No, he played 11 games in 2020.
Yeah.
He started at center. He started at right guard predominantly. He started a season at right tackle when they needed him there. And the Packers just overall love the makeup of this kid and the fact
and they traded up for him.
They traded up for him. Yeah, going up five spots to get him.
Yeah.
Seventh round, very quickly, just to touch on this. Michael Pratt, I mean, there's nothing I can even say about this kid. Watch Tom Pelissero's profile on him. It's an 11-minute video that the NFL and NFL Network put together. People were asking Insider Inbox on Monday when I was writing it, like, hey, when is the feature coming on this guy? I would love to write something on Michael Pratt, but I'm of that ilk that it's like if somebody else does it and does it better and just does it full bore, you just tip your cap to that person and let them have their story, because the job that Tom did on that, I mean, just to give you quickly a synopsis of this, one of his best friends growing up in high school played with him. The receiver to his quarterback, guys that came from two different walks of life. Young man commits to Georgia Tech at the same time that Pratt commits to Tulane. Unfortunately, you know, the young man ended up, committing suicide. And it's something that Michael has worn with him. He has the Believe 7 tattoo on his inner bicep. Very
wore the uniform number 7 as well in honor of his high school teammate and friend.
And then also lost his brother later on as well to an illness shortly after he had just become an uncle. His brother had just had a child. So a very interesting story, an interesting look into him. And I'll tell you what, for an 11-minute piece, it completely just zips right by. Then finally, Kalen King, last pick for the Packers. This is a guy, Michael, that coming off of his true sophomore year at Penn State, 18 breakups, 22 breakups, depending on who you talk to. 3 interceptions, looked, you know, played incredible for the Nittany Lions. He comes back his junior year. It doesn't go as well. Only 2 passes defense this past season. He has this precipitous fall down the draft boards, ends up going 255 overall.
And he chose to come out early. He could have stayed, but he chose to come out early and then ends up falling all the way to the 7th round when the Packers choose him with their 11th and final pick at 255.
And this is why I've been getting into a fight with people on Twitter, because they're all like, I made the comparison to Carrington Valentine and all these so-called experts and scouts that evidently know everything about every 7th round pick that's ever been in the NFL, telling me, no, they're entirely different players. No, dude, what I'm saying is that when you have a guy like Valentine, who also came out a year early when he could have went back, and he also is going to probably be the youngest player on this team this year. King, if he makes it, would be the youngest player on this team. I think he's going to play his entire season at 21 years old. All of that being said, his conference call that he had with media and reporters afterwards, incredibly emotional. You can tell this kid is motivated to show that he's still very much the player that he was his sophomore year. There was a 40 time that I think also kind of factored into this thing, right in that 4.6 range. I think he re-ran it at his pro day, and it was 4.55, but still teams were a little bit sheepish there. But I'll tell you what, he said the Green Bay Packers are getting the most competitive guy in the country, and just listening to him talk about it, I believe him.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one to watch for sure, and I want to get back to that, but I will take care of some sponsor business here quickly. SiriusXM NFL Radio delivers hard-hitting analysis and up-to-the-minute NFL news that true football fanatics need 24/7. 365. And at Cousin Subs, we have something for everyone, like our Wisconsin cheese curds, mac and cheese, golden fries, and creamy shakes, all paired with your favorite sub or sub in a bowl. Cousin Subs, 50 plus years of better. A couple other things I wanted to get to. One, I want to ask you who, in your mind, for whatever reason, you can take it any direction you want, but who is the sorry, I'm having a little trouble with my screen here. Who is the most intriguing pick in this draft for you? I'll start because to me, the guy that I'm most intrigued by is Marshawn Lloyd, the running back from USC. And most of the college football that I watch, admittedly, is Big Ten football because I'm a Wisconsin Badgers fan. So I don't see the West Coast, you know, guys a lot.
You also go to bed relatively early.
that too. I'm getting old. but man, 5'9", 220 pounds. That's, you know, That's the 220 pounds is Josh Jacobs' size, but he's a couple inches shorter than Josh Jacobs. You look at the numbers. Now, granted, he's on a team with Caleb Williams, you know, the Heisman Trophy winner, number one pick in the draft. So there's a lot of focus on the passing game when you're defending USC. But 7.1 yards per carry as a number one running back, that definitely opens your eyes. And I actually asked him on the conference call, you know, so is that, was the 7.1 yards per carry, is that more because of, you know, the speed and elusiveness, or is that more because of yards after contact? And I think he kind of wanted to get a message across with the answer to the question, because he immediately said, oh, it's yards after contact. I don't want the first guy or even the second guy to be bringing me down. So I thought that was really interesting, yeah, the way he answered that question. But also, as a receiver out of the backfield, he averaged like 17 yards per catch out of the backfield. So you're talking about a potential home run hitter. You know, call him a changeup, or, you know, the in between Josh Jacobs and AJ Dillon or whatever, if you want to. But I'm really, really intrigued by what a guy like Marshawn Lloyd might be able to do in Matt LaFleur's offense, and what, just, you know, what they might dial up in terms of a package of plays that they go, hey, this is where this guy can be really good, so let's use him this way and see what happens.
And just to build on that, and I'll give you a different player here in a second, but 5'9", 220 pounds, and he runs a 4.46.
Yeah.
And he put up 26 bench reps, I believe it was.
Yeah, I think it was either 25 or 26. But yeah, at 225 pounds.
That's ridiculous.
That's close to what a lot of offensive linemen, defensive linemen, yeah, do. They're in the mid to high 20s on the bench.
With all due respect to Aaron Jones, who I don't think felt like he ran his best at his combine, but, you know, Aaron, even though he put on a little bit more weight going into the draft than what he ended up playing at in Green Bay, he was probably closer to 190 than 220.
Yeah.
By the time he got done here, but
for sure,
you know, Aaron, I think, was in that 4.56 range. I mean, it just shows you how shifty and dynamic. Now you got to do it on the field, got to do it on the grass, but the prospects that there's a reason why Daniel Jeremiah, right after the Packers picked him, said he was the top running back in this year's draft.
Yeah. He was the fourth running back taken,
yeah,
and Jeremiah did not hesitate for a second and said, this is the guy I believe is the top running back in the draft.
And I think he's the perfect fit for Green Bay, because you do have Josh Jacobs, you have A.J. Dillon. He's not going to be asked to come in and be the number one back right away. That's one of the things that people always talk so much about Aaron Jones, and, well, why didn't Mike play him more early on? Aaron Jones was still learning how to be a three-down running back during those early times. Yep. Packers just weren't as deep at the position as they've been now the last 3, 4, 5 years. So incredibly excited to see where that takes us. You asked me, though, the guy that I'm most intrigued by, and I have to say it because it's the guy that I talk the most about of all the guys the Packers drafted in the pre-draft process, and that's Edgerrin Cooper.
Yeah.
Because to me, Quay Walker went on Twitter right after they took him. He's like, I'm looking forward to my new running mate out there. He's a little bit shorter than Quay. He actually ran 1/100th of a second faster than Quay in the 40. And he is a downhill, C-ball, hit-ball linebacker. I am so excited to see that infusion into this defense, because the line that, I forget which analyst it was that mentioned it on the third day, but the Packers have basically remade the spine of their defense.
Mm-hmm.
The second level and the third level, between the hashes, between the numbers, it's going to look different than it did last year. And I feel like somebody like Cooper can come in and complement what Walker does well. He can complement what Isaiah McDuffie does well. And then you add Tyron Hopper and Eric Wilson, some of these other guys, into the mix, and suddenly you have a really intriguing position battle from a position where, going into the weekend, we were kind of looking at, okay, well, exactly what do the Packers need to accomplish here to make sure that they have three inside linebackers with this switch to the 4-3?
Yeah, and a couple of things also as far as overall traits of this draft class. Brian Gutekunst talked, particularly on the defensive side, wanted to upgrade speed at various positions. And Cooper is a guy, yep, you know, who's, I think Gutekunst said he has rare speed for the position. And John Eric Sullivan said, when you see his speed on the field, there's a whoa factor to it. So speed was definitely not just with Cooper, but with other draft picks as well. That was definitely a high consideration. And as you mentioned, with a guy like Jacob Monk and some of these other guys, the experience level, the number of guys in this draft class that have 30 plus, 40 plus college starts on their resume. Now, a guy like Kalen King did come out early, came out a year early, didn't really play much as a true freshman, only played, you know, two seasons. He's one on the other end of the spectrum, not quite as much experience, but a lot of guys in this draft class have a high level of experience, just a lot of pelts on the wall in terms of the number of games that they played at, you know, in the major college ranks. One thing that was a surprise to me when it was all said and done in this draft, but then we sort of found out why, maybe a little bit why, is that the Packers did not draft an edge rusher or somebody who would be a defensive end in Jeff Hafley's 4-3 scheme that the Packers are building here. But then we learned from Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst on Saturday night, after all the picks were made, that Kingsley Enagbare, whom we all thought had torn his ACL in the wild card playoff victory over Dallas back in January and would need reconstructive surgery, yada, yada, yada. We've all seen it so often with ACLs. Kingsley Enagbare has not had reconstructive surgery. He is on a rehab and recovery path, during which the Packers are still hoping that he can avoid surgery, because his ACL issue has been termed by Brian Gutekunst an injury, not necessarily a tear. So that in part at least helps explain maybe why edge rusher wasn't as urgent a need heading into 2024. Because of Enagbare with an ACL in January, you're thinking he might be out all of 2024, if not most of the season, before he can come back. Now there's a possibility, and again, it's still only a possibility at this point, but if he avoids surgery, you're talking about a guy who can make a much bigger contribution in 2024 than anybody thought a few months ago.
I'm really happy this came up, because honestly, and I mean, eventually we were going to talk about it, but I was having a hard time trying to explain any of this to people, because one, Enagbare looked fantastic in the final locker room. I mean, I'm not judging people and if they're able to play based on how they're... He was walking around better than some of the people that weren't injured like after that game against San Francisco, because I was in the locker room, Mike. You know, it's a jubilant time. The Packers had just beaten the Dallas Cowboys, basically starched them.
Yeah.
And it was really hard seeing Kingsley Enagbare, who went down late in that game with what everybody thought was an ACL injury. He had the towel over his head. He was inconsolable. Just because, you know you get injured at that part of the season, you might be looking at being on the sideline for the next year.
Right.
Not only all that, but then we see these photos from the first day of the offseason workouts where the guys are just doing strength and conditioning stuff on the field. This guy's sprinting around hoops. I mean, he's doing all the legwork you would not expect to see from a guy that has an ACL injury in
April.
Yeah,
when you're only three and a half months removed from an ACL injury.
And lo and behold, the Packers, again, are holding out hope. Now, I don't know much about these things. I was always under the understanding that if you have an ACL injury, tear, whatever you want to call it, you're going to have surgery, because the ligament doesn't just heal itself like an MCL, an LCL, a PCL. So we'll wait and see how everything. I'm hoping good thoughts for him. But even more importantly, Michael, just looking at that position group as a whole, I'm not saying it's as deep body for body as like receiver is, but I felt like there was enough competition there already that wasn't going to be a huge need for them, especially if Enagbare is available, because a couple things along with that. I think they're very high on Brenton Cox Jr. He's going to get more opportunities this year to try to take that second-year jump, former five-star recruit at Georgia and Florida. You have Preston Smith back once again after he did some stuff with his contract. Rashawn Gary is healthy once again. I thought Lucas Van Ness looked really good down the stretch last season.
No doubt.
And they're at the 4-3 now. I don't know what kind of stuff they're going to come up with here with some of these, all these defensive linemen they have, and how they could potentially factor into being an edge rusher in some things. We'll see. We haven't seen
something
Jeff
that Carl either. Brooks certainly did at Bowling Green. Yeah. He lined up on the edge plenty. Obviously, different level of competition there. But
Hobie Wooden is listed 1 pound heavier than Lucas Van Ness. Now, he did tell Wayne Larrabee during the pre-draft, you know, pep rally, that I think he put on 20 pounds, and he certainly looks like it. But I just think there's a lot more flexibility. The Julius Peppers thing in 2014 opened my eyes to all the possibilities. Other than maybe TJ Slayton playing a nine tech, nothing really would surprise me anymore with the defensive front. But All that being said, the other thing Green Bay historically has liked to play around with the undrafted free agents there. Cox was the guy last year. You know, maybe there's another prospect there as well that could have
been. And that's the other part is not talking about those yet. We haven't seen the official list from the communications department as far as the undrafted rookie class. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it again this summer as well. No matter how difficult it looks to make the Packers 53-man roster, for whatever reason, there always seems to be somebody in that undrafted rookie class who emerges and proves to be a guy that they can't cut him because they know he's going to get claimed and he's going to go play somewhere else. So they keep him. They keep him, even though you would think that that would just be such a hard road to go, but somebody always seems to succeed that way.
Malik Heath made the roster at the hardest position to crack last year.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
There were so many guys. I mean, he beat out Bo Melton for a roster spot, and then Bo was one of their starters down the stretch last season. It just shows you how far that competition goes. You were asking about it. A lot of people were asking Brian Gutekunst about it. You always want to build the most competitive 90-man roster possible, but I do think there is a lot to be said for what happened at tight end and receiver specifically last year, where the Packers just chalked those two rooms full of talent, full of young bodies, and whether it was injuries or some midseason adversity, whatever the reason was.
Yeah, opportunities arose for so everywhere. Many guys for various reasons.
Yeah, they were, you know, everybody was able to get a crack at everything. Yeah. So we'll see where this takes them now in the offseason program. As everybody always talks about, they're in shirts right now. You don't have the contact football. We still have a long way to go. You have to be able to weather the injuries. But Michael, back-to-back really strong draft classes for the Green Bay Packers. They added 11 more picks to that. And again, hopes that you are filling out what hopes to be a championship caliber roster.
35 draft picks in 3 years. There are some teams that don't draft 35 guys in 6 years.
I wonder how many the Rams have drafted in the last 6 years.
I know, exactly. We have to go look that up.
I'll check that out for Thursday.
35 draft picks in 3 years, but it's how the Packers have gotten from where they were to where they are and trying to continue to move forward here with Jordan Love taking the reins.
Last thing I'll mention, and maybe you'll want to talk about this on Thursday, but if we don't, to make sure I get this out there, with the Packers making those trades and Minnesota moving up and the Bears basically picking where they were, the Packers went into Friday with more second and third round picks than the rest of the division combined and went into the final 2 days of the draft with 12 picks or 10 picks compared to 12 total for the rest of the
division. Yeah, the other three teams.
Way that, again, everybody has their strategy. There's certain needs that these teams have, but the Green Bay Packers were not messing around, and here we are.
Yeah, well, we've gone a little bit overtime again today, but that's okay because it was a busy 3 days at 12:65, and we'll have more to talk about with this draft class on our next show, but for now, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team. We have all kinds of draft content out there. Go to our Draft Central page on Packers.com. There's the stories, the videos, the highlights, the conference calls. Like, it's all out there for you on Packers.com. Be sure to check it out. For Wes, I am Mike. Thank you for tuning in, everybody, and we will see you next time.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait, did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.